Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Suns insider Kellen Olson joins Burns and Gambo to talk Phoenix Suns basketball.
Hey, Kevin. Kellen Olson, Arizona Sports. Nice to meet you. Welcome to the Valley.
Can you say it again?
I'm Kellen. Welcome to the Valley. Nice to meet you.
Courtside with Kellen. Brought to you by Southwest Gas. Committed to exceeding expectations today while innovating sustainable solutions for tomorrow.
Welcome back to the Burns and Gambo Show here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Gambo's got the day off today, and it takes a whole cavalcade of people to fill in for him on this afternoon edition of the Burns and Gambo Show, and that includes, for not one, but two segments, joining us live from Minneapolis, site of tonight's Game 2 of the first round of this Western Conference playoff series between the Suns and the Timberwolves. Of course, I'm talking about our Suns guru, Kellen Olson, who joins us here on Arizona Sports. Kel, what's going on, man? How's Minnesota treating you?
Hey, it's been great. Went out to the ballpark. Pretty decent weather. It was snowing the morning I flew in, so I was concerned about that, but everything's evened out pretty well.
It's a beautiful ballpark. One of my favorite in Major League Baseball. I don't know if you got a chance to catch a game there, right, in Minnesota?
Yeah, I actually went 2 years ago, and then again, we were in the city today, and they had an off day on Sunday. They were playing the Tigers at 1, and strolled over there, had a great time.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's a beautiful ballpark. All right, enough of the small talk, because we have this game two to get into tonight. From your experienced eye, what are some of the early tells that you'll be looking at when it comes to how the Suns start tonight's game to indicate that it's going to be at least a different type of contested game over the course of it tonight?
Yeah, I think the two obvious areas where I'm looking the most that are easy to monitor statistically are offensive rebounding and finishing at the rim. These are two areas where Minnesota completely dominated. The Suns barely got on the offensive glass at all. Meanwhile, the Minnesota had a pretty good night, a pretty fantastic night, actually. And then scoring at the rim, the Suns had an awful night, and then Minnesota had a pretty solid night. And those are two areas of a game where you would expect their size advantage to help them there, but certainly not to the degree in which there was a vast difference in those two categories. So if the Suns can not botch a couple layups, if they can just box out a little better and maybe get a couple more offensive rebounds on their own, they're back in a position, at least like statistically with the numbers game that we keep talking about during this segment, where they're going to be in a position to have this game within reach. And look, this was the 25-point deficit did not do it justice. They were down 4 with 7 minutes left in the third, and then Anthony Edwards went nuts and the game was over. So they were very much in this in a couple different ways, but those are just two really easy areas for them to clean up. And if we're talking about like adjustments, one of the adjustments, Burnsy, is just make layups. That's your first adjustment.
Yeah, and you touched on, as I expected that you would, one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about. And watching that game on Saturday, and you would know this better than I, so I'm going to defer to you on this one. How much of that is just kind of sheer sports randomness where, yeah, they got Rudy Gobert in there, and yes, he's going to alter shots, and he's going to change the approach and things like that. But the sheer number of missed layups, that sort of feels like a classic, hey, let's regress to the mean a little bit here. They're not going to miss that many for a second straight game. At least you would. Is that the proper way to think of this?
I think that's why I'm so interested to like hold off that take until tonight. Okay. And see how it goes. Okay. Because there were a couple of misses specifically where there was the left-handed layup that Booker went for, where he was clearly trying to like do like a teardrop floater lay-in, where he was trying to sky it over a rim protector that wasn't even there. Bradley Beal had a few around the rim where he was trying something fancy. Same with Kevin Durant, where I think Durant, if he would have just gone up on his left hand, he would have been good on the left side of the basket, but he went under to try and protect himself from Gobert, but Gobert saw that coming, so he caught him on the other side. It's a mixed difference. I think the offensive rebounding is the one where they're more under control. Eye test wise, it didn't look like a game where Minnesota was just imposing their will on the offensive glass. We saw that in the Pelican series a couple of years ago. You'll remember where that was definitely just a team just outwilling them in that kind of margin. Yes. I don't think it's at that degree yet, but again, I think tonight's going to tell us a lot about, okay, how much of this size advantage is really going to dictate the series as a whole.
And I was listening to a conversation on Wolf and Luke's show today, and it intrigued me about the rebounding thing. We don't think, and when I say we, you know, collectively we or you or me or whoever, do we think that the Suns have to win the rebounding battle tonight against Minnesota, or do they just have to keep the rebounding battle close today against Minnesota?
They just have to keep it close.
Okay.
And specifically what they have to do in these games, especially on the road, is not give themselves a hurdle to like make a hurdle presentable, basically. And what I mean by that is if you're down 16-2 in second chance points and a half of basketball, you're probably not going to win that game. There were a couple of different instances like that where the Suns actually created, I believe it was somewhere between like 20 to 25 points off turnovers in that game. But they themselves turned it over too much to not take advantage of that, because I don't know if they're going to be able to create turnovers in the way that Minnesota's defense is going to be able to. But they actually won that battle in that game. So there are a couple of different simple areas of the game where if they just keep those close or they separate where they should be much more in business. But there's a lot of like the schematic stuff that I'm sure we're going to get into here in a bit where they can make some adjustments and some fine tuning as well that will matter. But there's just a lot of like simple just be better stuff. But again, Bernthy, this goes back to our conversations on the show all year. It's about consistency. Hey, you guys had like three mistakes on Anthony Edwards' four baskets in the first half. Guess what? That probably came back to bite him, because if he would have only made one shot in the first half, I don't think he finds that rhythm in the third quarter.
Yeah.
But they allowed him to find that rhythm, and it's these mistakes we've been talking about all year.
Pop quiz part one for Kellen Olson, who's joining us live from Minnesota. Pop quiz part one. Number that concerned you more, the 22nd chance points the Suns allowed or the 16 assists the Suns had on offense in game one?
The 16 assists for sure.
Okay.
The preview that I wrote on ArizonaSports.com was really focused on offense, because that's what this team's huge strength is and is going to be and has been. And for them to produce 16 assists, it just speaks to their process being broken in some kind of ways. Because, look, Minnesota is an outstanding defensive team, and I thought they did really well with the adjustments that they made out of the gates and how they played on the ball and all that kind of stuff. But this team should walk through to 20 to 25 assists a game easy. And
yeah,
they should be in the 30s pretty much every game. And we've seen when they hit that 30 mark, they're nearly unbeatable. So to that point, Jusuf Nurkić was the guy finding some room. Can they get him the ball? Can they get him more involved as a playmaker? Can they go small more and overcome what hurt them in the first game, which those minutes without Eubanks on the floor or Nurkić went really well outside of the turnovers. So in those minutes, can they, one, are they going to go back to them? I hope they would for their sake.
Yeah.
And then two, can they take better care of the ball inside of those? Because those are naturally going to help them get some assists more. And can they find more room for Devin Booker? And can he overcome this obstacle in front of him right now that is Jaden McDaniels and a Minnesota defense, which sounds like a big responsibility for him. But we're talking about the guy who averaged 37 points per game against Ty Lue's schemes in the playoffs, so I think he can handle it.
Yeah,
he can figure it out.
I think he can too, and that's why I think sometimes you and I share a brain when it comes to either basketball or pop culture or movies, because a lot of times we share the same opinion. I was also would have said the 16 assists. That to me is not that you just cannot fall. I think you can live with 20 second chance points. Live with it is maybe a little strong. I think you can accept it. I don't think you can accept 16 assists out of an offense that has this many players on it. We're going to talk about adjustments. I'm going to specifically reference some of the stuff that was in your piece at ArizonaSports.com yesterday that I read this morning about kind of what to expect tonight. But pop quiz part two for Kellen Olson as he joins us live from Minnesota, and it is about Devin Booker. Is it more about A, getting him free, or B, he's just got to be better because we know he can be?
It starts with getting him free, because Jaden McDaniels is perhaps the best perimeter defender in the league. There are a couple of guys that are in the discussion right now for that mantle, for that position, for that label. And McDaniels is one of them. So coming into this game, that was not necessarily the matchup they'd been seeing. He had spent a good amount of time on Booker, don't get me wrong, but the whole Cat to Durant thing kind of threw a wrinkle to them, and they were looking to go after that mismatch more when their priority should be freeing up the two guys who were on the ball. And I think Minnesota's game plan was brilliant, and I think that they knew that if they put Cat on Durant and didn't bring over doubles, that the Suns were just going to look to attack that in the ways that they typically do, which is they slow everything down, they get Durant the ball, and everyone kind of moves out of the way instead of like getting Durant in a ball screen, instead of having Beal or Booker start the motion and then finding Durant come around motion, getting Cat on the move more. And all of that is going to help free up everyone, including Booker. So I think it goes with that. But this is not just like one way or the other. He has to be better too, but I think it starts with the positions that he's put in. And if we don't notice a discernible difference in the way that he's being used in this game compared to game one, then that's a huge problem, because this is what the postseason is all about.
So this is, I not to boil it down to something this simplistic, but you think when it comes to fixing Devin Booker, this becomes sort of a Frank Vogel, Kevin Young, let's coach it up a little better and figure out some screens to get him some more open looks and some more space sort of thing versus, hey, just be better, Devin Booker, right?
Figure out how to benefit from all the extra attention he's getting, because we've seen Devin Booker do it time after time and still score through that. But the most concerning part of that game was not that he was 5 for 16. It's that he wasn't really affecting the game as a playmaker that much either. They got to figure out at least one of those things, probably both.
All right. Part 2 of our conversation with Kellen is coming up right after we take this break here. He is live from Minnesota. Tonight's game starts at 4:30 Arizona time. And of course, you'll be able to catch all of Kellen's coverage either on social media during the game or, of course, at ArizonaSports.com after the game, where he'll have the best write up in town. Guaranteed at ArizonaSports.com. When we come back, more about tonight's game. Want to talk a little bit more about Devin Booker. Want to talk about Anthony Edwards. Want to talk about Yusef Nurkic and the role that he could play in evening this series up. That's next here on the Burns and Gambo Show with Kellen joining us from Minnesota.
Round 1 of the NBA playoffs. Suns at the Timberwolves Game 2. Pregame at 3:30 this afternoon on Arizona Sports 98.7 and the Arizona Sports app.
Welcome back to the Burns and Gambo Show on this Tuesday. Suns Timberwolves Game 2 is coming up at 4:30 here on Arizona Sports. We'll have Tim Ring, and it's going to be Tim and I for about an hour with Here Comes the Suns and the Burns and Gambo Show previewing this matchup that's coming up. But right now we are talking with our Suns guru, Kellen Olsen, who joins us from Minneapolis to preview tonight's game. And I read your piece. I read it this morning at ArizonaSports.com. A lot on Booker. We talked about him. A lot on Anthony Edwards. We're going to talk about him. Let's talk about Yusef Nurkic's role, both in terms of relieving some of that stress in terms of the rebounding, but also maybe more importantly, kind of serving as the hub for them offensively. How much more does he need to be involved in tonight's game, do you think, Kel?
A lot. Look, I know a lot of people listening are rolling their eyes and being like, if Yusef Nurkic is the key to this series, then the Suns are going to lose this, and that's a horrible sign. But the point that I'm trying to make here and bringing him up is that with an offense like this against the league's best defense, you're in the postseason, teams are going to take away a lot, but they're going to give you something when they're taking away a lot. And right now, what they are giving up is Yusef Nurkic. He was able to score 4 buckets in the first like 16, 17 minutes of the game that were basically just freebies for him because of how high Rudy Gobert, Karl Anthony Towns, Naz Reid, whoever was coming on those ball screens for either Devin Booker or Bradley Beal. He was able to find that space, and then they only found it one more time the rest of the game. They did spend some bits going small, but outside of that, they weren't able to find him there. In the early second quarter, they were able to sort of have him reset on the ball, and what Minnesota was doing was called top blocking, which is they were preventing Kevin Durant or Bradley Beal running around the handoff and Nurkic kind of scooping him the ball, as you'll see him do. But what that allows is those back cuts that we've seen all year. Durant had two, Beal had two, and Durant had one as well. So that they were able to find some space for those guys, and particularly Nurk. And the possession that intrigued me the most was in the third quarter when they ran a pick and roll 30 feet out, and Nurkic caught the ball in the short roll about 15 feet out, and then he kicked it to the right corner. 3 passes later, Bradley Beal opened 3. It didn't go down, but that's the type of ball movement where you get the threes, you get the gear spinning, you get a rhythm going, and it appears that Nurkic, for now, at this point in the series, is the key to that. And if you punish them with that, maybe Gobert doesn't come as high on that screen anymore. Maybe all these mid-range shots we were talking about coming into the series can start to get up. The Suns shot 65% from the mid-range in that game, which is pretty darn good, but they weren't able to fully benefit from it because Minnesota was taking that away now instead of that typical drop coverage. So can they counter the counter to make them counter the counter, thus the Suns get the counter from that counter to get the other counter and counter that counter? Did that make sense?
I need a cocktail. What? I'm sorry. Did you say something? I got a little confused with all the counter talk there.
Playoff basketball, baby. This is why we love it.
I'll tell you who else loved it on Saturday afternoon. That was Anthony Edwards. And, you know, for a lot of the national media who had kind of been foretelling this national coming out party for Anthony Edwards, it was all of that. And I'm I know we've had a lot of conversations about Edwards. You and I spoke last week about how I kind of thought he was the key to the series in that it just seemed unlikely they were going to be able to contain him to the level that they had during the regular season because he's such a talented guy. Did his individual success set up his playmaking, or did his playmaking set up his individual success? And what do the Suns need to do to counter Anthony Edwards and the stamp that he put on that game on Saturday?
I think it was both flowing at the same time, Bernsey, and that's extremely concerning. He was fantastic, and I think that the small amount of slippage that we saw in that game, look, there wasn't like a six possession sequence where you were like, oh my gosh, classic Suns, here they go, their tail spinning, all that kind of stuff. You could argue it was happening during the third quarter, but that was Anthony Edwards going nuts. But there were just small mistakes that they were making a lot, particularly with Edwards, that allowed him to get going. In the piece that you referenced on ArizonaSports.com, I clipped it. There's four possessions that he scores on in the first half. All four are coming off of a miss or when Minnesota's bringing the ball up. Three of those included mistakes. Two of them were when the Suns didn't find him and match up with him in time. And then the other one was Devin Booker following him through an off-ball screen and just not getting the proper help behind him, or he wasn't in the right spot. There was some sort of mistake that obviously happened there because Anthony Edwards got an open layup at the end of it. He goes into the third quarter, gets a midi, gets another midi, gets another midi. After that first midi, when he's starting to take dribbles and knock down mid-range shots, what the Suns will be okay with. We talked about this all year. Once a guy gets going, you got to limit him. And that's what the Suns weren't able to do. They weren't sending doubles over once he dribbled the ball once or twice. And then he found a rhythm, and then he hit threes. Some people were criticizing Kevin Durant's defense at the end of the third quarter, but Edwards was on fire by then and was hitting ridiculous shots. You want him to take off the dribble threes. He shot like 32% on those last year. You want him to take those. But it's just small little mistakes because they were able to contain him. They were able to force those turnovers. A lot of what they did in the regular season was there again, but it was just a little less consistent in the grand scheme of it. And guess what? When you play against a guy that good, that talented, who's an elite playoff performer at this point in his career already, he's going to shred you. And he did. And he did so in a way that not only made him better, but his teammates better. And that was the whole theme of the conversation, right, Bernsey, is like, is he that kind of playmaker where he can really lift up his teammates as well as himself? And that was the dude we saw in game one, and that's a terrifying prospect for the Suns.
Yeah, and it felt like that was the dude that we didn't see during the regular season. We didn't see somebody who was as comfortable getting other guys involved, even though he's got a lot of guys around him and can shoot the three very, very well. And by not, it felt like that's where the advantage potentially was for the Suns, is if they could take away that playmaking element of him because he wasn't trusting the guys around him, then you could kind of limit him. So it sounds like you're saying the Suns need to be, and I think I saw Frank Vogel basically say the same thing, the Suns need to be a little bit more present and a little more aware and a little more active in sending double teams his way to make sure he's not out there just creating whatever he wants with only one guy of resistance in front of him.
Yeah, I saw some The Dunker Spot is a terrific podcast. Nikias Duncan and Steve Jones were talking about the adjustments that Minnesota made. And one of them was, we've talked about a guy being one pass away for the Suns and how it makes other teams, puts him in a compromising position to help on Kevin Durant when he's in one-on-one or Devin Booker in one-on-one. The guy one pass away Minnesota made sure to be there was Mike Conley. But look, if Mike Conley takes 14 threes tonight, I think the Suns are okay. As long as Anthony Edwards only took like 9 shots, that trade-off is one that they'll take, but they weren't really able to adjust to it. And we'll see how their shape can consist, because the guy guarding Conley, was Grayson Allen. And if Grayson Allen isn't able to play tonight, it's going to be other guys in positions they haven't been in yet much this year, especially in this kind of environment. And I'm really interested to see how that goes if he's not able to play. And if he is able to play, will Minnesota go at him? It's a huge part of this game. They cannot afford to miss not only his spacing, but his defense as well.
Yeah. All right, leave us with this, and I would have asked you about Grayson Allen, but we still don't know with his questionable status. Kind of leave me with this, and let's spend the last couple of minutes talking about the psychology behind this and kind of the mind games behind the basketball. When the Suns dominate Minnesota in the regular season the way they had, when Minnesota turns the tables as quickly and as brutally as they did on Saturday afternoon, can the Suns steal that all back with a win? How far do you think that game one win went for Minnesota in sort of reestablishing what their perceived dominance over the Suns might be in this series?
I think that it's flipped now to where Minnesota just has the confidence now that they always knew that they could beat the Suns, but now they have like that, yeah, it was just a regular season confidence for them. And if Minnesota just kicks their butt again tonight, now I think Phoenix is like, oh man, was that just a thing in the regular season? I think that's a possibility for sure. I think that if you're looking at the two teams where doubt could start to creep in, I think Phoenix is the team you're more concerned about, especially after game one and the way that it went for Minnesota. Because I think that if the Suns win in this series, how they're going to win is hitting a lot of threes and those guys going nuts. And I think that Minnesota, for the most part, they're going to look at losses and figure out mistakes. But for the most part, they'll probably leave them going, yeah, they hit 17 threes. Booker had 41. Durant had 28. Like, there's not much we can do about that. That's fine. We'll bet on that not happening the rest of the series. There's little things we can do here. Like, I think their confidence will remain there. But the way that just, like, again, imposing their will, physicality, the way that Minnesota is winning is not only a lot more sustainable, but I think that it plays a lot more into what you're talking about.
Yeah. Kellen, we appreciate the time. As always, thanks for the extended conversation today. Look forward to reading your content tonight and tomorrow at ArizonaSports.com. And, of course, everybody can follow you on X as well if they don't already, if they're a Suns fan. Appreciate you stopping by for a few. We'll look forward to talking to you soon. Okay, safe travels.
Thanks, buddy.